Committee of the Whole will come to order. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 42. The reader will read the bill. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 63. The reader will read the bill.
House Bill 63 from the Corporations Committee, an act relating to unclaimed property, amending advertising notice requirements and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 63, Unclaimed Property Advertising, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, and Dan Zwanenser, signed by Representative Kirkbride, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanenser?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 63 do pass. There is no standing committee amendment, and I would turn the floor managing of the bill over to the good representative from District 53.
Representative Edwards.
Chairman, House Bill number 63 was an interim bill. It was brought before us, and it is on the administration or the advertisement for abandoned property from the treasurer's office. In line 15, you'll see that there's a strike through on there. It's currently that they have to advertise in one newspaper, and it costs about $35,000 for them to do one time, and that's once a year. And they want to do it one time, or it's one time now, and they want to change it to where they can do multiple areas of the state so that it'll get out to where other people can be able to see the advertisement. In this, on the advertisement part of it, they're wanting to go into different areas of it, not only the newspapers, but into the radio, into the internet and Facebook and other possibilities that they can look at so that those people that have unclaimed properties are able to go out and find out they have them and claim them. On this, my son here a year ago found out that my mother was deceased, that she had unclaimed properties there, and he found it because he was familiar with it. And I went on there to look and see what all was on there, and I found out that I had 9 to 10 relatives that had unclaimed properties. I probably did a better job of advertising than the paper that they had paid $35,000 to. And I will be open for questions. If no questions, I would move that the bill pass.
Any discussion on the bill? Representative Patton? Oh, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question for the good representative. The only concern that I have with this is, you know, the newspaper is a single spot where people can look. There's some consistency. I'm afraid that if this were to be put in different places, a person may not know where to look, unless it was simultaneously advertised in newspapers, Facebook, Craigslist, whatever the case may be. But I guess the question that I really have is, wouldn't it help the public if they knew where they could go or where they could look for their abandoned property? If it's a consistent spot like a newspaper, they would know. This bill leaves such a broad discretion to the administrator that a citizen would have to play a guessing game of where to even look, whether it be Facebook or Craigslist or other websites, newspaper. And so I guess that's the concern and question that I have. Thank you.
Representative Edwards.
The Department of the Treasury was wanting the capability to go other places than just to the one newspaper that did their advertisement one time a year for an extended amount of money. They can still use the newspaper. They can put spot ads in there so that they can refer them to a web page that the Treasury Department has, unclaimed properties. And if you go to that, you'll find out, and I would recommend that all of you do that. Take a look, see if you're on there. It just gives them better opportunities and more places, more times that the public can find out if they have their name on there.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually think the bill does, it gives more discretion than that. I'd probably be more comfortable if it said that they'll advertise one time in the newspaper and then have the ability to advertise in other ways. But this is taking the requirement to have this in the newspaper out and take it into other formats that some people may not be familiar with. And so I just have a little concern when I see something that strikes out what has been deemed to be public notice within the state of these properties to something that is just strictly in the administrator's discretion. And that's what this... That's what this does. The administrator shall advertise the unclaimed property in a form that, in the discretion of the administrator, is likely to attract attention instead of a set standard, which the legislature has done. Furthermore, you look at the repealers, which is always important to do, the Romanettes 1 through 3 and or 1 through 4, again, take away some more of the what I guess would be the oversight that the legislature's done for its citizens to make sure they have a reasonable mechanism to know they have this unclaimed property.
Chairman Zwanitz, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To address some of those concerns, first, the administrator in this section is the state treasurer, a statewide elected official, and so we're hopefully empowering someone who has been elected by the people of the state who understands the need and the will of the citizens to enforce this. Basically, what happens now is the statute dictates that they advertise unclaimed property one time in a newspaper generally circulating in the state. So they always choose the one newspaper in the center of the state as it's the main statewide newspaper, and they do it once a year, as the statute says. After however many years, at least a couple of decades of doing it the same way, they've realized they're not getting any new hits outside of the same people asking year after year. And so now that we can track unclaimed property, be it real estate, be it gift cards, which you'll hear about in the next bill, they know that some of these people may live in the far west southwest corner or the far northeast corner, and that's where their family's from. They may have friends. That's where the property or the merchandise in general was headquartered. And so they can better target to certain areas of the state. They can do that through technology. They can do that. They have an online website now, but they just like the flexibility of removing the statute to empower them to be able to use some new technological means to target people based on information you can now find on the Internet, in the public records, et cetera. And so I don't think we're giving all that much latitude or discretion. We're taking out an older statute and allowing the state treasurer to try to find the owners of abandoned property or unclaimed property and trying to really make sure those people understand and learn that they can go to the treasurer's office and that they are on a list and they have stuff owed to them. And so we're trying to make this more consumer-friendly to the people of the state and target them in a more appropriate manner, or members of their family or friends who may be more likely to see an advertisement in a local paper or through Internet means than checking out the center newspaper in the state once a year in January.
Chairman Patton, you've been very patient. Did you want to question?
Thank you very much. At that time, the man on my left and the man on my right both asked the same kind of questions as to how the change that is being made by the bill doesn't seem to give to the options that was just suggested. So some people some people won't believe this, but there are folks that do not look at a computer email, Facebook, Twitter, and so forth. They just don't do it. So if you're trying to get modern and do it that way, what you are doing is excluding those people that don't have that kind of equipment. Hopefully the measure can be amended so that it's all encompassing, so it might happen in more than one place. Electronically is free in many instances. So my concerns were well voiced. Thank you.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is somewhat related, and you know, I agree with other speakers that have said this isn't just a small change here. We're really changing the direction. And to me, it's very important that the administrator be consulted in this. And I did not hear, I might have missed it, but I didn't hear whether or not the committee heard testimony from the administrator to make sure that this was an appropriate direction to take.
Representative Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, we did hear from the both the head of that Division of State Government and the administrator of this department, whose job it is to divest the state of this property, not to collect it. So their every interest is to try to get these types of things into the hands of the people. I think you'll find that in that newspaper that was referenced by the good chairman, on that same date that it's been for years, there will be an advertisement. It just won't be a giant advertisement. It will be something small that says, you know, go to this website, look here for this information. But this will enable to put it in papers all over the state. And I would also note, we did the same kind of a change a year ago with legal advertising. We decreased the need to put legal advertisements in papers as frequently and as in size that we had been doing that, and went more to little notices that said, look here for this same information. So we're trying to accommodate people that are really dependent on newspapers, but also the changing times and the new ways you can do this more effectively with electronic communication.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't want my comments to be taken wrongly, but I think it's great that the administrator wants to reach out and try different ways to let people know that they may have this unclaimed property. What I'm saying is, why are we striking out the newspaper? We're taking it that the administrator, the elected official, is saying, hey, I'm going to do it this way. I want to guarantee that something is still put in the newspaper, like we've done. And I was just wondering if that was considered. Why, if we could consider that he shall still put that, or she shall still put that in the newspaper, and then give them the freedom to move out and advertise by other means. And, you know, the good chairman of education said, well, there's still a lot of folks out there, believe it or not, that aren't all that tech savvy. So that was the intent of my comment, was why don't we still have the requirement to be in the newspaper to make sure it's done?
Chairman Zwanisser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Certainly agree with those comments. From the testimony, I believe the administrator fully believes that he and that executive office will continue to use newspapers instead of just one statewide circulated newspaper. They can target specific ones with specific properties. And so never in the testimony was it foreseen that we would do away with basic newspaper advertising. It was just the will of the committee to, I guess, very narrowly, not overly amend the statute and change the wording to open it up. But we can certainly, on a second reading amendment, add that it shall be in a newspaper and in other forms. I don't think there's any there would be any dissension on my part or what we heard in testimony of that being the case. And so we would certainly look at a second reading amendment to mandate that a newspaper, perhaps as well as other smaller newspapers and other forms of communication in today's day and age, be allowed.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple things with this. It does give such broad discretion as for the administrator of what route he wants to use as far as to disseminate this information. That's number one. But I guess number two, if they are going to continue to use newspapers or advertise more than one time, that I would think there would be more of a fiscal impact. Whereas on our fiscal note, it says no significant fiscal or personal impact. So I guess the question for me is, are they going to go the cheap route? And if that's the case, then who knows? Is it just going to be on Craigslist where it's free? I guess it's too broad, in my opinion. I think it needs to be narrowed down. So with that, thank you.
Representative Edwards.
It just gives a possibility. It still will be using the newspapers, and there's a possibility that they will be using the radio for radio spots, the internet, Facebook, and there are probably other means that would be better spent with that $35,000 than doing it one time, one place. One of the members on the committee, if you like the way it was, I guess vote no on it. If you like the opportunity to give them a discretion to where you might be able to see it and your constituents might be able to see it, vote for the bill.
Chairman's wanted, sir.
Just following under that, Mr. Chairman, I guess I would ask you to vote in favor of it, regardless if you like it or not at this point, and we can better tailor it on second or third reading. The way the statute reads now is the administrator, in this case, already has broad authority and discretion of how large he wants this advertisement, whether it be in color, black and white, multiple pages, or it's in totally in his discretion to make, you know, a 5x7 small ad once a year. And so we do trust the process of our state elected officials and that in their best judgment, they're working hard to get this unclaimed property back to people. But we certainly would entertain a second or third reading amendment that better defines the duties and hopefully meets the body's will. But I would ask you to vote yes today, and we will come back tomorrow and hopefully find some wording that is mutually agreeable for all parties.
Any further discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with recommendation that House Bill number 63 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? House Bill 63 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 42. The reader will read the bill.
House Bill 42 from the Corporations Committee, an act relating to unclaimed property, amending language to include merchant stored value cards, providing definitions, extending the period for abandonment for gift certificates, merchant stored value cards and credit memos, providing a repeal date and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 42, Unclaimed Property Merchant Stored Value Cards, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Paxton, Dan Zwanitzer, and one no vote, Representative Lindholm, signed by Representative Dan Zwanitzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Zwanitzer.
Mr. Chair, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 42 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment that I would move at this time, Mr. Chair, but I think an explanation of the bill is necessary first before we talk about the standing committee amendment. So I would turn over the management of the bill to my former colleague on the Corporations Committee, who's been promoted since then, to discuss what has been a very well-worked and extensive and necessary bill.
Chair Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, so this bill deals with what happens when a gift card or a gift certificate is not redeemed. So a merchant sells the gift card or gift certificate, the purchaser or the person it was given to does not use it. And We currently have laws on our books of what happens to those gift cards and gift certificates. So if you'll find, you'll find on your desk a big, a two-page flyer that has a big HB 42 at the top of it. And this explains, the front page explains what the current law does. So what the current law for those uncollected gift certificates is, for a gift certificate, a paper gift certificate that is unredeemed for a period of 3 years, is unclaimed property. So if it's over $100, a merchant is supposed to turn those funds over to the unclaimed property division after 3 years. And then the if you find your certificate, you can take it to the unclaimed property division and get your money back for it. If it's under $100, then the merchant, or if it's $100 or less, then the merchant has the option of continuing to honor that card, which is what most merchants do, or gift certificate, I'm sorry. They have the option to continue to honor that, or they can expire it. A gift card, however, because it's not defined in our statutes, falls under the general unclaimed property rules, which is different than the gift certificates. So the way we handle gift cards is we give them a 5-year redemption. If they haven't been claimed in 5 years, all of the money from those cards goes into the unclaimed property division. Okay? So what the committee proposed to do is, for, you know, our first goal was to make both of those that we consider to be basically the same product, to make both of those have the same kind of treatment. So we defined merchant stored value card, and we narrowly defined it because a lot of these cards now are used for things like insurance refunds or paychecks even, or food stamps, or you know, their credit card reloadable for dollar amounts. So we really defined them down to something that a merchant sells that they can redeem for merchandise. And so we added that into wherever there was a gift card, gift certificate definition. And what we said was 5 years after the purchase or the last use, because some of these are reloadable cards. So 5 years after the purchase or the last use, and then we kept the $100 limit. So if it's over $100, then it gets turned into the unclaimed property division. If it's $100 or less, then the merchant has the choice to redeem it. I also wanted to mention the 5-year stipulation that we have in there. That became federal law in 2009, and it had nothing to do with unclaimed property. It was in response to the recession and some of the practices that were going on by credit card companies, and so they passed an overarching card act, and in this act it said that merchants have to redeem cards for at least 5 years. So that's why everything was changed to 5 years. And then what a lot of the committee testimony was, so that's basically the committee bill, and I'll walk you through the bill in more detail. But I also want to point out the committee amendment, which was a very important thing that was discussed over the interim. It was passed in the committee this time, but it was in response to the discussion of, what if I find a gift certificate or a gift card in my drawer after 6 years, and the merchant is still willing to redeem that? We want to make it easy for them to do. That's a consumer protection as well as being good for the merchant, to be able to say to their customers, I'm willing to redeem that. Whenever you bring it in, if you bring it in 10 years later, whatever, I'm willing to redeem that. And so the amendment says if a merchant's willing to redeem it, and if there are no fees that are imposed on it, and this was an old practice that a lot of not so savory characters participated in, but they would issue gift cards and then they would take $5 off as a fee each month until the gift card was basically worth nothing. So if we don't impose any of those fees besides the actual purchase of the card, no fees imposed, no expiration date, then we're going to say that it is not subject to unclaimed property laws. And that way you can take your gift card into the merchant, which is much, much easier than taking your gift card to the unclaimed property division. So looking at the bill itself, The first part of the bill really begins on page 2, and we've defined a merchant stored value card as intangible property. Then we go on to define the merchant stored value card, and again, these definitions, which appear on page 2 and the top of page 3, are really designed to narrow it down to something that a merchant or affiliated group of merchants sells in a specific amount that can be redeemed for merchandise. We've eliminated something that's given on page 2. We've eliminated anything that's been given under an awards program or a rewards program, loyalty incentive rebate program. So we're really talking about something that was purchased at face value for a merchant. Beginning on line 21, we've added merchant store value card wherever we have gift certificate and credit memo in the current statutes. And we've changed a little bit of the wording just to make it sound a little better. And then on page 4, beginning with line 3, in addition to changing it to the 5-year redemption period, we also added 5 years from the purchase or the last use, because again, a lot of these are reloadable cards, and so it's the last use that the holder of the card had. The rest of page 4 and 5 are just adding merchant stored value card wherever there's gift certificate and credit memo. And then on page 6, line 7, there's a repealer on there, and it says this section is repealed effective July 1st, 2019. The reason we put the repealer in is there's an Uniform Unclaimed Property Act that, similar to what we talked about the other day with the Uniform Commercial Code, we try to have some similar laws to other states so that somebody knows where the unclaimed property belongs. For instance, if someone dies, and they don't have any heirs, is it where the property exists, or is it where the person lived in terms of where that unclaimed property would be given? So we have these uniform laws, and there's a new Uniform Unclaimed Property Act that's coming out in 2017 or 18. And so what we wanted to do was make sure that we looked at these provisions again, somewhere around that time, and that's what. And it was also to send a message to business owners to say these might not be the rules we have down the road. These are just the rules we're adopting today. So on to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. The first part of the amendment is just dealing with some language issues, but the second part of the amendment, beginning on page 10, is really where the meat of the amendment is, and that is adding back in the ability for a card that does not expire and does not impose a fee for the merchant to remain the custodian of that card. And so with that, I'll stand for any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
We're on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Is there any discussion? Do I hear a call for the question? Question having been called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill, and there is a Committee of the Whole amendment. Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, and I will walk you through this amendment step by step. Page 1, lines 2 through 4, delete entirely, including the Standing Committee Amendment, to line 4. Page 1, line 5, delete repeal date, insert exclude gift certificates, merchant store value cards, and credit memos from the Act. Page 1, line 11, delete 34-24-114, insert 34-24-114A. Page 3, line 21, insert A, strike existing language and delete new language. And the same all the way through page 4, lines 1 through 6, and that's where we get to strike existing language and delete new language entirely and insert gift certificates, merchant store value cards, credit memos, and credit memos are not subject to abandonment under this Act. Page 4, lines 8 through 23, delete. Page 5, lines 1 through 23, delete. Page 6, lines 1 through 7, delete entirely, including the Standing Committee Amendment. And page 6, before line 9, insert section Wyoming Statute 34-24-114B through D is repealed. And as an explanation for why this amendment is coming, if you'll all turn to the handout that you were given, there's a section in it that shows what other states have done. As passing this this bill as it stands right now, we would be somewhere in middle no man's land on how we handle these items. They are gift cards. By putting in this amendment, we no longer are counting on the state to collect our gift cards after 5 years and store them forever. What we're looking at here is going to a store where you have a gift card, say you find your gift card or what have you, after 5 to 6 years, you'd go to use said gift card, and it would show 000 if this bill were to pass as it stands now without the amendment. Most of us would just throw our gift card away. You wouldn't think anything of it, but it is in the unclaimed property, and that's where it would be forever, unless you knew to go to the unclaimed property to get your gift card money back. I will stand for any questions on this amendment.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So on and against-ish the amendment, the amendment is actually a very business-friendly amendment, and it would make it certainly very easy for business owners to not have to deal with these with unclaimed property at all. But what I would argue is that we have worked over the interim on this, and what the amendment would do, it would strip out basically the consumer protection part of it. And the consumer protection is, you know, is something that we need to guard. And again, looking at these different ways that different states handle it, the states on the far left column, that would be in the same category as the proposed amendment. There are states that have 100% of all of the unclaimed gift cards and gift certificates that escheat to the state. And so the bill and the amendment are in basically the third category, which says, well, we're going to give you the choice. If you choose to be consumer-friendly and not expire and not charge fees, then we're going to let you keep custody of the money. And if you choose not to do that, if you choose to have them expire or charge fees, then we're going to expose a certain percentage of your cards to unclaimed property statutes. So it strikes a balance. It allowed people to comment on it in public testimony, which was an important part. So I would encourage a no vote on the amendment.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the amendment, this is a good amendment, and I'll tell you why. To me, it's just onerous for the government to tell business owners that they're responsible if their consumers lose something that they sold them. And that's what the current law does, and the bill as originally introduced makes it a little bit better, but this just gets rid of that requirement. If someone comes into my store and they purchase, let's just say, a pair of sunglasses, and they leave and they lose those sunglasses, it's not my responsibility to figure out that they lost those sunglasses and then send the value of those sunglasses to the state. But if they come in and buy a gift card from me, and after 5 or 6 years they lose it, well, now I'm suddenly responsible to pay the state for the amount of the value that was left on that gift card because the consumer lost it. And I just don't think that's fair to business owners. As a business owner, we honor gift cards. It doesn't matter how old they are. If we switched to a new system, and so we had to manually write down and print out every single unclaimed gift card to make sure that if somebody came in, that we could honor it. If they've lost their card, we have a way to find the balance and help them out with them. We want people to be able to redeem them. But with this amendment, it just takes that initiative off the business owner to be responsible for somebody who loses something that you sold them. And I don't think it's government's job to tell a business owner to do that. So I would encourage you to vote for this amendment. Thanks.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Remaining neutral on the amendment, but maybe some more clarification on what you're voting on and why I both like and dislike the amendment. Why I like the amendment is if a gift card comes from another state, basically what the law is going to do now if you pass it without the amendment, after 5 years it goes to unclaimed property. So you go use your gift card. It doesn't work at whatever retailer you go to. You have to hopefully have the cashier, who may or may not have been there for a year, or it might be your first day, have to know to tell you you should check with unclaimed property to see if that gift card might have money on it, and have to go check with whatever state treasurer. The issue is, if that gift card is bought in another state and you don't know exactly where that gift card was bought from, let's say, you know, someone sent it to you for Christmas and you have no idea if it was bought in our state neighbors to the south, to the north, to the east, you know, on the East Coast, you don't know to check all 50 states unclaimed property to figure out where that gift card may be residing based on the barcode. And so that's why I like the amendment, that it does take that opacity out of the bill. Why I dislike it is if you do pay $100 for a gift card, you have to know right then that if you never use it, that money is going to stay with the retailer forever, and it basically, it's just buyer beware. If you give it to someone, they don't use it within 5 years, they're not going to get that money back, and it goes to the retailer of whoever issued that gift card. So that's the division, and 17 states have gone all the way with this. We heard some testimony in committee that we're maybe not ready to take that leap, that we do want some more consumer protection. The inverse is, if businesses are willing to, well, that the inverse is either no consumer protection or being extremely, extremely business friendly, and don't have any safety for the consumer without the amendment.
Representative Petroff, do you have any more? Representative Lindholm?
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to reiterate that no one has ever been forced to buy a gift card. You know where you're buying them. Now, granted, you may have been gifted them, and that's kind of a forced deal, but at the same time, recognizing that asking the state to escheat something, the actual definition of escheat is something very different than what's in the actual bill. Escheat means the state actually takes ownership, whereas that's not exactly what would be happening if the bill were to pass without this amendment. And that's why on page 4, lines 1 through 6, where we add gift certificates, merchant store value cards, and credit memos are not subject to abandonment under this act. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was trying to understand this. Now, suppose I've got a gift card. Let's just say I walk home to the hotel tonight and I lose my wallet, and my wallet has a gift card in it. Then whatever else is in my wallet, I'm just kind of out on that. But the gift card is going to be redeemable by me if I can go through some process of verifying that it's my gift card. Is that right? Is that what this is doing? You're taking a special approach to gift cards compared to my other asset or other articles in the wallet?
Representative Lindholm.
That would be correct, Chairman, after 5 years. If you had over $100 on the gift card and you waited around for 5 years and hoped that said thief or whoever did not use that gift card.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just to clear things up a little bit, this doesn't have anything to do with a lost card. If you lose your card, you lose your card, because unless you have a receipt with the barcode on it, there's no way to prove that you purchased that card. So a lost card is likely lost, and so taking that out of the unclaimed property portion of it. And the other thing I wanted to just make clear is that the escheat to the state takes custody of it. They don't take ownership of it. So theoretically, in perpetuity, they would be able to, if you found your card. So if you lose your card and then you find it 5 years later, then you could take it to the unclaimed property. But what we're saying is, and what I think most merchants do, is the same thing that the representative from Casper was talking about. We talk to merchants all over the state. We're trying to be customer friendly, and so we don't expire our gift cards and our gift certificates. And so when we don't do that, it basically says, then you don't have to, the bill as amended, not with the bill as amended by the committee, not on the floor, basically says if you're willing to operate in that upfront way, then we're going to let you be exempt from reporting under unclaimed property. So it's that little bit. That's the difference between the standing committee amendment and the floor amendment, is we're putting the extra piece of protection on. You can choose not to participate as a business in the unclaimed property portion by not having expiration dates and not having fees. And the House floor amendment that you'll be voting on says you just don't participate in unclaimed property, period, and you can make all the rules, charge any fees you want to on your cards. You can expire them in a month or a year. And we don't think people will do that, but it just at least puts those protections in place.
Just a reminder, we're on committee of the whole amendment number one. Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Do I hear a call for the question? Question having been called on committee of the whole amendment number one, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the whole amendment number one passes and is adopted. Division having been called, all those in favor, please stand. Committee of the whole amendment number one stays adopted. We're back on the bill. Is there any further discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you. So I want to make clear that even with the standing committee even with the floor amendment passing, this bill is very much needed because right now everything escheats to the state for an electronic gift card. So that means that you have no ability as a merchant to be able to continue to honor that card past 5 years. And so it's really important that we pass the bill, and I encourage your aye vote.
Any further discussion on the bill? Do I hear a call for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it does do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 42 do pass, say aye. All those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 42 has passed the committee of the whole. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, it's not that often that we get folks from my county. You know, Natrona County, the number one on your license plates, number one in your heart. Actually, for you new folks, yeah. Members, it gives me a great privilege today. We have some folks from Casper, and really my old days as a Midwest oiler. I want to introduce Larry Shalini, who now lives in Gillette, and then Jeff George, a constituent of mine in Casper. They work for one of the larger employers in the state of Wyoming. They're here for the Mining Association, so welcome to the House.
Ladies and gentlemen, just a point of clarification. I won't interrupt floor debate for privileges. The chairman did a good job of catching it between bills, so please do that and allow others to discuss their bills. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 10. The reader will read the bill.
House Bill 10 from the Education Committee, an act relating to post-secondary education, authorizing the Wyoming Community College Commission to enter into and administer reciprocity agreements with other states on the licensing of specified post-secondary institution, authorizing admission of post-secondary institutions with a physical presence in Wyoming under the reciprocity agreement, and providing for reciprocal licensure in Wyoming of institutions located in the states that are signatories to the agreement, granting rulemaking authority and authorizing fees, providing an appropriation, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee No. 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 10, Education State Authorization Reciprocity Agreement. Respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that I do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Freeman, Hunt, Yagi, Northrup, Patton, Paxton, Pieperinen, Summers, and Throne, signed by Representative Northrup, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Patton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 10 do pass, and to further move the adoption of the amendment, Committee Bill, Committee Amendment number 1. If I might, I'll proceed with the amendment. It's on page 9, line 13. It states before which shall be expended, and it's a matter of just completing the sentence and making it clearer. It does not change the body of the bill. I would move the adoption of the amendment.
On Standing Committee Amendment number 1, is there any discussion? Question being called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I yield the floor to the good member from Rock Springs, who actually is a pretty expert living daily with the subject that he's about to explain.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I'm from the town that has green water that runs through it. This is a pretty simple bill, but it deals with a lot of different things. I was trying to find a nice way of saying, well, it deals with this, and it deals with this, and it deals with that, but it's more comfortable with that or than that. If you look in your box, there is a handout that has House Bill 10 and my initials in House District 60. Basically, what's happening is that most states have laws to stop paper mill universities. And by putting together that legislation, that prevents states or universities or these institutions going into states and starting to recruit students. So what happens is people have procedures to where that you can go in and recruit students. And in the case of the institution that I work for, they also have to seek permission to have a teacher teach for them. My direct supervisor, spends a good percentage of her time, probably close to 25% of her time, filling out applications for every state in the country. In some states she doesn't do because the filing fee is like $10,000. So what this bill does is it allows us to become part of a reciprocal agreement to where that we authorize the Wyoming Community College Commission to work with...
Representative Freeman, one moment, please. Representative Speaker Pro Tem Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to raise a point of order, please.
Continue.
Mr. Chairman, it's been brought to my attention this bill actually contains an appropriation but was not re-referred. So I'd ask that maybe that it be moved down the list so that we can do that and then get it back before the Committee of the Whole appropriately.
Chairman Patton. Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't believe a motion is required. We can continue the bill through the Committee of the Whole, at which time I will ask to refer it down to the Appropriations Committee.
Representative Freeman, sorry for the interruption, but please continue.
I forgot where I was.
You were doing a very good job of convincing us.
I think the speaker said that too. But this is this will permit the Wyoming...
Representative Freeman, I apologize for re-interrupting you. One moment, please. Majority Floor Leader Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I apologize, Representative Freeman. Because of the re-referral, that bill, House Bill 10, will have to be debated at a later time, so we'll have to move that down on the general file. So we'll start this. You had a great practice, so we'll start it over again, hopefully tomorrow. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's something to keep in mind, is that as chairman and as a committee, you need to be real certain that if there's an appropriation or a fiscal note in it, that we then, the next step after you hear it in committee is that you need to then, once it's been read in to the chamber, that you need to then re-refer it to committee number two, appropriations. The next thing I wanted to advise you of is that we'll keep moving along as much as we can. I will try to close up shop here today at 10 to 4 or close to 4 o'clock. So we'll keep doing this, and then I'll give you a new list of what we don't finish today and what I know that's going to be read in. Okay? Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
Please continue.
Thank you. Members of the House, we have in the country 5 national beef ambassadors, and one of them is here, one of our own, Rachel Purdy from Pine Bluffs, up in the western balcony. If you'll welcome her, please.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 19. The reader will read the bill, please.
House Bill 19 from the Capital Financing Committee, an act relating to public funds, providing that a state fund investment manager shall be registered investment advisor under federal law if the investment manager is required to be registered by federal law, repealing conflicting requirements and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom is referred House Bill 19, Registered Investment Advisors, respectfully reports saying back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Blackburn, Dayton, Edwards, Jennings, Laux, Madden, Northrop, Reeder, and Wilson, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 19 do pass. And I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to the legislator from District number 29. He and I are both on this Capital Finance and Investment Committee, and he's going to do this one.
Chairman Patton.
Thank you. Try again. This bill has been reviewed by the state treasurer and suggested by the Select Committee on Capital Finance and Investments. Pretty straightforward and sort of a bill that what we're actually doing is calling for all representatives, financial representatives, that are hired by the state to be registered representatives. This is in compliance with the Investment Advisors Act of 1940. No, I was not there at the time. The compliance to that is to try and make everybody that we hire as a financial advisor to be a registered representative in pursuance and compliance with the Federal Act as amended. The as amended refers to, if you want to go that far with it, the Glass-Steagall Act, which had the banks as a part of the thing and were not registered representatives. So this cleans that up, and puts it all in the proper form, that we know everybody that deals with the state of Wyoming as a registered representative. Stand for any questions.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Madden's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 19 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 19 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 20. The reader will please read the bill.
House Bill 20 from the Capital Financing Committee, an act relating to the administration of government, clarifying statutory duties, requiring entities to provide direction to the state treasurer on an allocation and distribution of funds as specified, requiring submission of acknowledgement and receipt as specified, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom is referred House Bill 20, Clarification of Duties of Treasurer's Office, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Blackburn, Dayton, Edwards, Jennings, Laux, Madden, Northrop, Reeder, and Wilson, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that Bill number 20 do pass. And if it's okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll explain the bill.
Continue, Rep. Chairman Madden.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is another thick bill. I've had a lot of these this year, but this one is an easy, thick one. And to give you some background, you know, these are all statutes that control what the treasurer is responsible for and what they're not responsible for. And the genesis of them goes back probably, you know, probably this beginning of the last decade or the last century, perhaps. And anyway, what the attorney for the treasurer's office did is spent the summer, or part of the summer at least, looking at statutes that are impractical in terms of what is observed to take place in actual practice. And most of these things all involve the same issue, where there must have been a time in this world where the treasurer issued checks on every dollar that came in and was expended, and that's just not the way it's done anymore. The treasurer is the custodian of the money. But as far as monitoring federal grants and monitoring contracts for road projects and all these kind of things, that's beyond the purview and the what the treasurer does. So they've got specialists in various departments throughout the executive division that are capable of doing that. They've been approved by federal agencies, or, you know, in grant making processes on who's responsible. The feds and everybody else has auditors that make sure the money is spent correctly. And all it does, all this whole thing does, is revert back, not revert back, but to go forward and say, this is the way it's done. And not only that, this is the way it's done. This is the way it's been done for years and years and years. And so what you'll see in the statute, once this is engrossed and turns into a public law, is we'll have a statute that matches what really happens in the money transactions that occur for the state. Just take, for example, I'm not going to go through all of them because it sounds like a broken record, but if you go to page 2, here's, you got a Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, federal and state funds, custody and disbursement of the state, by the state treasurer gifts. State treasurer is the custodian of all funds received from the federal government. That's existing language, and we're not changing that. But when we get to the second sentence, that state treasurer is crossed out, and we put in there the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation shall disperse the federal and state funds for these purposes and submit receipt and acknowledgement to the state treasurer. Okay? So he's still the custodian, but the actual, you know, the nitty-gritty of writing the or issuing the funds to the proper payee is really done by the Division of Vocational. Another one, just kind of looking at random, if you look on page 3, this deals with prepaid, starting with line 13, you talk about prepaid plans, authorized agreements with insurance companies and withholding from checks and so on. And it says here in line 19, upon request in writing from any employee of the state of Wyoming, any covered political subdivision thereof or participating school district, the state treasurer or the proper official in any political subdivision may deduct from the wages of the employee, so it authorizes the withholding. And the, you know, in the case of state employees, you know, the keeper of the payroll purse, so to speak, is the state auditor. That's just the way it's set up there. You can call the state auditor in Wyoming is really the comptroller when it comes to dispersing funds and managing payroll and things like that. I got another one here on page 5, disposition of collected fees and monies in the general fund, payment of expenses to the board. This is the Wyoming Livestock Board. Well, obviously, when services are rendered by the Livestock Board, it isn't a deal where they send a payment to the treasurer for those services, but they deal with the Livestock Board, and then the Livestock Board is obligated to deposit the funds in the treasurer's office. So rather than belabor this, and in the interest of time and to not make the majority floor leader upset with me, I'm going to, you know, dispense with the rest of it unless there's particular questions on that. I can go through any of them you want, but I know what the answer is going to be. It's just going to be more or less describing what is actually done in practice. Now, the last thing I'll add is that, you know, the Revenue Committee kind of oversees or takes care of legislative business that the Management or Capital Financing and Investment Committee does. And one of the questions, an important question, was, did anybody from any of these departments that are affected by this have any complaints? And there was nobody there. There's nobody who had a complaint. And it verifies to us that nothing new is changing as far as how business is going to operate in the treasurer's office. It just says we're going to make the law reflect what actually is in practice good management of our funds. So if there's any questions, I'll answer them. If there are no questions, I'll call for the question.
Is there any discussion on House Bill 20? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Madden's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 20 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 20 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 104. The reader will please read the bill.
House Bill 104 from Representative Baker, an act relating to big and trophy game licenses, authorizing the reservation of unused big or trophy game animal licenses specified and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 104, Big and Trophy Game Licenses-Reservation, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Clem, Freeman, Kirkbride, Larson, Petroff, Schwartz, and Steinmetz, signed by Representative Petroff, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Petroff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 104 do pass. And I further move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and I'll turn the explanation of the bill and the amendment over to the good representative from the land where the springs are rocky.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to move to divide the amendment. Two divisions, first division being lines 4 through 6 and lines 12 through 13, and the second division being lines 1 through 3 and lines 8 through 10. Speaking on division 1, I think it's a friendly amendment, and if...
One moment. Representative, just to clarify, lines 1 through 3 would be Division 2, correct?
Division 2 will contain lines 1 through 3 and lines 8 through 10.
And Division 1, again, please.
Division 1, Mr. Chairman, will be lines 4 through 6 and lines 12 through 13.
One moment. Okay. The amendment is so divisible. Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Amendment 1 is friendly. I think it just addresses concerns that the agency had with implementing this with the time. Also, just basically some cleanup with the words on lines 4 through 6. So if there are no questions on Division 1, I'd call for the question and ask for your support.
Any discussion on Standing Amendment 1, Division 1? Question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Division 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Division 1 has been adopted. Continue, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, I think I'll go over the bill briefly and then explain Division 2. So currently in Wyoming, hunters have a variety of opportunities. One of these opportunities that currently exists is if a hunter draws a moose, sheep, or goat tag and incurs a disabling illness, has a military excuse, or loses the majority of their opportunity to hunt, i.e. forest fires, they can apply for a holdover on the tag. A holdover allows the game and fish to reserve that tag for the individual for the following season. These tags are very coveted and sought after by a large group of hunters. The game and fish can then, through rule and regulation, either remove that tag from the quota the following year or issue an additional tag. For example, in year X, there are 10 tags. One individual receives a holdover. The following year, the game and fish can either issue 9, 10, 11, or any other number of tags for that area and species. The bill would simply bring in the limited quota big game tags, elk, deer, and antelope, into the same system of holdovers. There are a number of limited draw areas throughout the state that are as difficult or more difficult to draw as a moose than a moose or sheep or a goat tag. So moving on to the amendment in Division 2 of the amendment. Under the current system of holdover, there is no fee for reissuing the license for a moose, sheep, or goat the following year. The division of this amendment, which I urge you to defeat, would implement a fee for this process. This new fee could be up to the amount of the original license price, and in reality what this is a system of double taxation which creates a new possible stream of revenue for the game and fish. Let me illustrate. Hunter X receives a license and pays for that license, then receives a holdover. The following year, Hunter X would pay again for the license that was paid for the previous year. Meanwhile, the game and fish could issue the same number of licenses the following year, effectively charging the public twice for the same species. For example, if the grizzly bear becomes unlisted and hunting season starts, Hunter X could pay $6,000 the first year, apply for a holdover, and then pay $6,000 the second year for the same animal. I would move to defeat Division 2 of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 104.
We are on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Division 2. Is there any discussion, Representative Freeman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask you to consider to vote for Division 2. During the discussion in the committee, was looking at this and thought that a reasonable fee for the holdover would be appropriate. Since it was a committee, we didn't have a whole lot of lead time in there. And frankly, what would happen is most of the time, if the license was about $50, to ask to pay for the license a second year would be a reasonable way for the Game and Fish Department to cover the administrative cost. There is a problem with this amendment, I'll be very frank with you, is that if you have an out-of-state license and they've done thousands of dollars to ask to do it for thousands of dollars again, I think that would be inappropriate. So here is a situation to where that we would have to trust the Wyoming Game and Fish Commission to where that they would put reasonable fees on that. And it's my hope that it's the fees that they come up with would probably be reasonable in the $25 to $30 range. But I can't tell you that. But every time that I miss a flight or I can't go on a airplane, I get charged $150. So this is part of the landscape. And then a general pushback is I don't think hunting licenses are taxation. So to claim that this is double taxation, I think, is a stretch. So I would wish that you would favorably look at the second part of the amendment.
Representative or Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I strongly urge you to vote in favor of this amendment. I'm not certain that this would have passed our committee if it hadn't been for this amendment because of the fiscal note. And you know, part of the thing we're doing, there's a very limited number of holdovers right now because we only do it for moose, sheep, and goat. And so the administrative cost of adding this whole new program has to be paid for somehow, and we're giving a benefit to the public by saying you have purchased this and now you're not able to use it, so we're going to hold it over for you. That's a benefit for them, and they should have to pay for that benefit. And again, some of these licenses are as low as $52. So we're giving the commission authorization to go as high as an initial license. But again, there's a lot of play in there. They can charge whatever they want to charge. We had many people who testified in the committee on behalf of many different organizations who were very concerned about the fiscal impact of this and who only supported it based on us being able to add an administrative fee. So I strongly urge you to vote in favor of the amendment.
Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question would be then, why didn't the committee at least put in a percentage to specify how much they could charge for those fees to limit it?
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regards to the previous comments, I think that I would feel more comfortable if we put a cap on it, if we just did a flat fee of, you know, $25, $35. I think I would feel more comfortable. But, you know, in reference to the fiscal note, I'm glad that was brought up because I think that there's some concern with this fiscal note. And for clarification of the body, with the adoption of Division 1, and the changes to the bill, the Game and Fish, they gave a rough estimate of for the modification of the fiscal note. So if we were to adopt it, you know, moving forward, as we did with the Division 1, we've limited this now to just quota species. So for me, the adjustment of that number was moved down dramatically. Right now, you can see your fiscal note is $157,000. And just for clarification on how that works, if you look at your fiscal note, they've got $157,000 on 2016. So basically, what they're projecting is their losses for this year, for this year's season, for on to next year. But then if you look underneath that, they retain half of that back the following year. So really, their losses are cut in half. But that being said, their fiscal note was drawn up without the Division I that we just adopted, which limited this to quota species. And then moving forward with that, you know, I take real concern with what was said in committee. You know, I question the figure because I disagree with the assumption that the fiscal note, because most of this is done electronically, and by integrating the new species into the system, the Game and Fish is projecting that the bill could result in the need for one additional full-time commission employee to accommodate the workload. Testimony in the committee from the agency is that this bill would be the quote-unquote straw that broke the camel's back, and I resist that notion. That this opportunity is for hunters to going. This opportunity for the hunters is not going to be the straw that broke the camel's back, requiring another employee. So for me, I think this is just their way of justifying one more employee into the system. So I really question the fiscal note.
Just as a reminder, we're on Standing Committee Amendment 1, Division 2. Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question that pertains to the amendments. And it's something I want to know if the committee considered or if anybody knows would even be possible. But I was wondering about the concept of charging a fee to be able to participate in this program and then have the license be free. And let me explain what I mean. When I purchase an airline ticket, I always have the option of, would you like to buy insurance on this airline ticket? And I can pay a $15 or $20 fee, and if I do so and then I get sick or can't make the trip, I can then get a refund on the entire price of the ticket. I'm wondering if it might be possible to do something similar for these licenses, where you'd have a lot more people that would have the option of making their hunting license free the next year if something happened to them as kind of insurance on the ticket. That way you could make it more affordable for one person, so it's not prohibitively expensive for him to have to buy two licenses. Maybe it's a $20 fee. It would probably make the Game and Fish Department more money because you'd have a large number of people participating to pay that optional fee to protect their license. And it might be. I'm just wondering if any concept like that was explored, or if anybody knows if that would be possible or legal.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to clarify that we did try to put a limit on there, and that was up to the cost of the license. So we did that knowing that the Wyoming Game and Fish Commission would have the final say on where that would go. In response to the last comment where that you could buy insurance for your license, I think that's a viable idea. But being on this committee for the last 2 years, I can see the people coming out of the woodworks right away and saying, well, this is just a fancy way of saying that this is a fee increase. I think that the department is already trying to provide insurance so that people will have their hunt, but they have to have rules, and we have to help with that.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I strongly urge people to vote for this amendment. And all you have to do is turn it over to the fiscal note. And you see there's both administrative impact and there's non-administrative impact. We heard the comment, well, I don't believe these numbers. Well, there are numbers. There are associated numbers with this. And this is just kind of a continuing pattern of, you know, what we see is Game and Fish type licenses come in. Usually it's to offer a free or a cut rate license, and you know, to some special group of society, and they say, well, let Game and Fish figure out a way to pay for it. And this is a deal here where all you have to do, if you decide you don't want to go hunting, you call in sick, You say, I'd just like to go next year for the same deal in the same location, and you guys figure out how to pay for it. And that's not the way we do business. It comes at a cost, and I assume that the Game and Fish is proficient enough to come up with a cost that's going to zero out this negative impact that some kind of a law like this would bring about in the first place. So by all means, if this bill has to pass, I think we need to approve as part of the amendment. The other thing, the final thing I'm going to say about it is that the reason it worked so well with these sheep licenses and moose licenses is we have a manageable number of them. And, you know, everybody looks forward to one of those licenses, and they're not going to call in sick just because they want to wait till the next time or the next year to do this. It's something they've probably waited for years to do. And if you open it up like this, it's going to be, there's going to be a moral hazard that is going to cost a lot of money. And if it is a lot of money, then we need to have a way of recovering our cost for Game and Fish.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This isn't really opening it up. Originally, when the bill was drafted, the fiscal note was drafted. I requested the agency to provide another fiscal note with passing of Division 1 of this amendment, which basically limits this bill, because if you'll notice, when it was originally drafted, it was drafted for general draw. Okay, now we've changed it by the adoption of Division 1 to limited quota. And in limited quota, the hunters are in the same situation. This isn't something that, you know, you just come by and you get a general tag. This is something that a lot of times people wait for. They put in for the same areas, for example, Little Mountain south of Rock Springs. It's a very coveted draw area. There are a lot of places in this state where we have coveted areas that people put in time and time again with the hope of receiving one tag in their lifetime. So I don't think you're going to have people just get a cold and call in sick. No, there's a process in place. So the Game and Fish has already established this process with these other species. We're just adding limited quota big game into this system. So just to comment roughly on the fiscal note one more time, I believe that, and maybe somebody on the committee can correct me, but I believe that the Game and Fish did a quick analysis of changing, remember, from a general draw to a limited quota draw, which we just adopted, and they adjusted the fiscal note down to, I believe, $90,000. So this $157,000 with what we've just adopted is not accurate. So if you're taking the $90,000, again, you're going to cut that in half, and they're going to recoup the second half of their cost the second year. So at worst, it's going to cost $45,000. So I just want to clarify that for the body.
Representative Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I asked the Game and Fish Department for those numbers and to help quantify this discussion. Last year, there were 415 medical license or medical caused license refunds and 7 military refunds. So what I did a little quick math here on the fly, and if the state imposed a $25 replacement fee at those numbers, roughly 420 some, they would bring in $10,600. Now, if you take that fiscal note of $157,000 and you divide the number of refunded licenses into that, you're looking at a cost of around $390. So I'm not sure how they derived that $157,000 figure, but anyway, it was only 415 licenses refunded, so that should help with the discussion.
Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had those same numbers, was going to say the same thing, so thank you.
Chair Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so, you know, again, in favor of the amendment, the fiscal note is a guess. We have no idea how many of these licenses are going to be returned. But we do know there's going to be a cost. We do know there's going to be an administrative cost for a new system that's not currently in place. And so the testimony in the committee was that what people really wanted from this was the ability to hold over licenses that were difficult to get. And they were willing to, in fact, they testified that they wanted to pay for the privilege of being able to have these licenses hold over. And so that's all we're asking them to do, is to be able to pay for this special privilege that that we're granting them.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I hate to beat a dead horse, but this fiscal note was prepared prior to the adoption of the first division of the amendment. It was prepared, and we have more accurate, we can get more accurate numbers. This fiscal note is kind of a doomsday, in my opinion, because they're saying they have to add a whole other person because it's the straw that broke the camel's back. This stuff can all be done electronically. It's a system that can be put in place and implemented by integrating it into the system that already exists with moose, sheep, and goat. So I urge for you to resist Division 2 of the amendment, and I'll call for the question.
Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to come to the defense of the sponsor a little bit, every piece of legislation that we sponsor in here has an administrative impact on one agency or another somewhere. And these agencies, a lot of times we do things that they don't want to do. And they'll take those fiscal notes and they'll inflate them because they want us to think that it's going to be harder for them to administer a new program. And that's why I said we should probably limit it to a certain percentage. The percentage you have it at now is 100%. So it's a good idea, and we could probably fix this in a second reading amendment. So defeat the amendment, and let's look at it in second reading.
Okay, just for a reminder, we are on Division 2 of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor of Division 2 of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Division 2, is adopted. We are back on the bill. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of quick questions, if I might. As I'm reading it, it says medical refunds. Is that the only reason they could be refunded, is for medical reasons? I don't see that throughout the bill. And the other question is, we're talking about refunds of licenses. It says issued or purchased. And my question is, we're talking about resident, non-resident. What about those that are bought and donated? What about those that are paid for by the state that we give back to the Game and Fish to distribute however they feel like it? Is that the full effect of, and what where are we going with that?
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that's handled through rule and regulation. A lot of this is handled through rule and regulation, so the reasons that an individual can even get a holdover is handled through rule and regulation. Again, it's a debilitating illness, military, or the last one is, the majority of your opportunity is not available. So, for example, a forest fire. So if you draw a tag in an area, and between the time that you draw that tag and you're able, the hunting season starts, if, you know, that area catches on fire, or there could be any number of you know, possibilities, but that's handled, the majority of that's handled through rule and regulation.
Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wanted that clarification. I was just interested also in the many different licenses we issue.
Representative Baker.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I didn't really get the question.
The the many different licenses that are issued. You know, we talked about the resident. We talked about non-resident. But, you know, there are licenses that are bought by individuals and donated back to the department to be given out. Will they have that same opportunity? The other one is that you said that it might be done by rules and regulations. I'm just kind of wondering where the rules and regulations are on concerning these different licenses. We have those that are paid for by the state, by the legislators to give to the Game and Fish to actually have them give out. Are those included in this type of restitution?
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have the answer right off the top of my head. I will get that to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chair Petroff's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 104 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 104 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration.
Mr. Chairman, a quick privilege, please.
Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Up in the back gallery, we've got a couple of gals from my hometown in Newcastle. County Treasurer Susie Oberman and one of her assistants, Deputy Danette Price. So, welcome.
The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 5. The reader will please read the resolution.
House Joint Resolution number 5 from Representative Dan Zwanitzer, a joint resolution proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution to remove any mandatory retirement age for Supreme Court justices and judges of other courts in Wyoming. Mr. Speaker, Committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Joint Resolution number 5, mandatory judicial retirement, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobar, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, Winters, one no vote, Representative Halverson, and is signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number House Joint Resolution 5 do pass. And the fine chairman from Laramie County will present the bill.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the 63rd, I finally made it past jackalopes and roadkill into serious legislation, and I would appreciate your serious consideration of a possible constitutional amendment in this regard. Our current constitution sets the mandatory retirement age of the of judges for the Supreme Court and the district court at age 70. And so what this constitutional amendment does is take out that provision and allows the legislature to set in statute what the mandatory retirement age would be. So you have a survey of the field. 21 states have the 70-year-old mandatory age limit. 10 more states set it between 72 and 75. One state sets it at age 90. The remaining 18 states have no retirement age. We've certainly seen in this state that judges can serve past 70. The judge who swore us in this body is a retired judge that left the court at age 70 when he hit the mandatory retirement age. This bill has been before the body before. In past years, it was as high as 25% of the members of the House. This year, I did the math. 17% of this body is over age 70, and if we had a similar constitutional requirement to not be able to serve, 17% of us and 30% of the other body across the hall would currently be out of compliance. The other thing you know, there is no restriction on the federal judiciary, and so a federal district judge can serve past age 70. As well in Wyoming, this does not apply to circuit court judges. And so we have an inconsistency that if you're on the state Supreme Court or state district court, you must retire at age 70. But if you're on the circuit court, you can serve past them. There are two Committee of the Whole amendments coming forward. I personally, I'm neutral on both. The way it reads right now, if we took this provision out, I didn't want to bring a separate bill to set the age. The statute right now is 51106. If the voters did approve this amendment, the age would stay at 70 until we change that statute to whatever age was agreeable to the body. You'll see an amendment before you that raises it to 75 in the Constitution.
The two amendments have not been moved yet.
Correct. Mr. Chair, I am just, for my first time speaking, letting the body know what's coming. And so I do hope for some good debate. I do think the age of 70 is too low. People are living longer, and we've had some very qualified judges have to step down at age 70 before they've gone on to do other things, arbitration. We've had some take over state agencies. we have had some continue to assist on the bench and other roles. And so I would hope for a serious deliberation of this body to remove the 70-year-old mandatory age requirement to something more befitting. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
There are two committee of the whole amendments on this resolution. Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Joint Resolution 5 and ask for its your favorable consideration. Members of the body, I wanted to bring this amendment because I wanted to have a discussion. And there's a difference, I think, between term limits with judges and with elected officials. Elected officials stand to be reelected every term, and there's always a choice between this person or that person. So the will of the voters, I think, is pretty clear. With judges, for practical purposes, we just don't have that. We do have the recall elections where they face recall or whatever the term is, but for practical purposes, it just doesn't ever happen. If I remember correctly from our testimony in committee, in the history of our state, there have been a total of 3 judges recalled due to those recall elections. So for practical purposes, once somebody is appointed a judge, they're there until the mandatory retirement age. And I think that it's healthy to have turnover on the bench and turnover on the Supreme Court. So that is what I like about having a mandatory retirement age. But what I don't like about the mandatory retirement age is I don't necessarily think it's appropriate to say, oh, you're a certain age, you're no longer fit to serve. And so what I tried to do with this amendment was kind of find a balance. It would still allow, it would still get rid of the mandatory retirement age, but it would institute a term limit of 3 consecutive terms, which would be a total of 18 years. I think 18 years is a long time to serve. But at the same time, I think it kind of forces that turnover. And so that way, if somebody gets appointed to the Supreme Court when they're 60 years old, it wouldn't mandate that they retire at 70. It would mandate that they retire at 78 after having served 3 terms. So I just wanted to bring this as an option because, again, I like the concept of forcing somebody to step down and let somebody new onto the Supreme Court, but I don't like the arbitrary line for that to be a certain age. I'd rather have it for the time served. So that's the amendment, and I welcome any discussion.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want some comments back on the amendment for consideration. The representative who shares the same vocation as I do, him and I came up with 4 judges in our memory that hit. So I'm sure there were more who weren't retained. But also a practical point, and probably more towards the district court judges, is the fact that if you decide to put your name in the hat to become a district court judge, and if you are selected through the process, you're giving up your practice. And so, you know, 18 years sounds like a long time, but is that 18 years, if you're 40 years old, and you've given up your practice to be a judge, and you come back at age 58, you still should have a couple good years left in you. You're practically starting over. And the other component, too, is if you recall, we increased judicial salaries trying to attract people to the bench to draw them away from their practices, so we had good qualified minds sitting on the bench. And the issue, and I'm not quite certain of this, but one of the other attractions I do know is the retirement benefit associated with going on the bench, and that's one of the things that helps attract the quality of the candidates. And I just don't know if the 18 years is enough to allow the vesting of the retirement. I'm afraid I'm a little weak on that area. But I just want to throw that out there as something to definitely consider if we're looking at this, as it may become, we may find ourselves back in that position. We can't attract attorneys to quit their practice and step on the bench, and we might then be forced again to come back and look at the compensation scheme, and kind of like where we are right now. So just food for thought. Thanks.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Is there any further discussion? Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know the answer to the retirement question. One other thing, just as food for thought, this would only limit it to three consecutive terms. So if someone served as a judge, they were forced out after they had left, they would be able to be appointed again a judge in the future. Just, again, food for thought. Vote how you will.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Chairman, I would urge you in the strongest terms I can to vote against this amendment. It's a bad idea. As the point has already been made, one has to sacrifice one's law practice and go a completely neutral and void most of one's professional associations and most of one's business associations in order to become a judge. And that certainly won't work to say, well, a judge could serve a couple of terms, and then he could set out a term and come back. Well, that's good theory, but what's he going to do during that period when he's setting out a term? You cannot restart a law practice like that, and you cannot reestablish those business associations and those professional associations. It just doesn't make any sense. It will have an effect on retirement. I think I know what it is, but I'm not sure. I don't want to make a statement that would be wrong, but it will affect retirement if it's limited to this. And furthermore, these judges either get better with time or they get worse with time. If they get worse with time, there is a process to put them out. I agree with the last, or with the statement was made. I can think of at least four judges that were removed, and I can think of another judge that was removed by the Judicial Supervisory Commission. And I think there were two of those, but I can know there was one on the Supreme Court that was removed by the Judicial Supervisory Commission. So the point is, if they're not doing their job, if they're not performing as they should, there are mechanisms for removing them. As long as they are doing their job, it is a very difficult job. It's a job that largely walls one off from society. You don't see judges out at the bar. You don't see them at the big parties. You don't see them at all those things. They have to disassociate themselves from all that and lead a rather isolated existence. And it's just, and I've seen judges who either were not retained on retention or hit age 70 and went back out and tried to practice law, and it doesn't work. And in fact, it's kind of the one that in particular that I saw was kind of a pathetic situation when it happened. So I don't think that's practical. And so that net result of that is going to be, if we put this in, we are now going to decrease the quality of the candidates that will apply to be a judge, because they look at the risk and they look at what they're going to potentially have to do, and they're not going to make that kind of a permanent career change. So for all those reasons, I would strongly urge you to vote no on this amendment.
Chairman Patton.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's one element that somehow or another has escaped the conversation or the consideration, and that element is that there's a Judicial Conduct and Ethics Commission that was reorganized in the mid-80s. It has functioned, and it has functioned very well. It has been the participant of the discharge of a number of justices. I was on it, so I can't tell you who they were, but I can tell you that there's a number of them. So there is a process during their term that a judge, if found incompetent, a drunk, not getting his job done, and that kind of thing, that a complaint can be made, and it's made and investigated, all secret. So that no names and none of their past work is whatnot is brought forward publicly. But it works. And I tell you that the people that are on it now, because it was changed, it didn't work very well before and was subject to criticism, even within the bar. And please understand, I'm a layperson. But it was changed so that there are a number of citizens that are on the committee, citizens that are selected on their basis of participation in their respective communities, and with one exception, pretty well respected. I being the exception. it's kind of fun to be an exceptional one once in a while. My point is that when we talk about age, if age is a deterrent, I'll step aside. I don't think I'm the one to be a poster boy to influence your decision one way or the other. But on the matter of age and saying that a given cutoff date, such as early as 70, this is not inherently the quality that you're looking for in your Supreme Court in particular. So I reluctantly want to suggest to you that there is more than one supervisor over the judges that does have the power and the enforcement of removing a justice from the bench, and it provides a complication for retirement, but nonetheless has been handled successfully in a number of different cases. That part is not broken. It does work. So with that, I in my particular position, I will be voting against the amendment.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just because I haven't said anything all day, I thought I'd just get up and talk. The thing that doesn't make sense on this amendment to me is that the Supreme Court justices serve 8-year terms. So that means they can serve a total under this amendment of 24 years, and district courts serve 6-year terms, so they can only serve 6-year terms. So you're actually allowing Supreme Court justices to sit longer than district court judges. And so to me that's incongruous in terms of the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question either for the bringer of the bill, the bringer of the amendment. This part of the Constitution was amended once before, 1976, I think is what it was. And I didn't know if either one of those has some information as to what was amended at that time. If, in fact, in the original Constitution there really wasn't a limitation, perhaps it was more like a lifetime appointment with the caveat that they were elected still. With that's my question. Thank you.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you. And trying to remember from the conversation 6 years ago, I know it dealt with the retirement and compensation on line 6 and 7 in there in the bill the last time we amended this section. And just for the body's understanding, if you want to learn about the retirement of judges, it's 5-1-106, and there's a 7-different step process depending on what age the judge is when he arrives on the bench for the Supreme Court or the district judge. And so the judicial retirement statute is 5-1-106, and that's the same statute that would keep in place if this amendment were to pass the 7-year age limit.
We're on amendment amendment number 1, committee of the whole amendment number 1 to House Bill Joint Resolution 5. Is there any further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 has failed. We have another Committee of the Whole Amendment. Minority floor leader throne.
Promoted.
Maybe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to propose Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 to House Joint Resolution 5, and would ask for your favorable consideration. When I read the proposed amendment, I was concerned that it didn't have a specific age in it, and now that I understand it better, I realize that the legislature would still have the ability to set an age. But we've been down this road before, and we all seem to agree that 70 is, or a lot of us seem to agree, I should say, that 70 is too young. But leaving it open-ended might make it more difficult to sell the idea to the public. And so that's why I'm really just throwing out for discussion purposes a specific age, which would raise it 5 years, and then allow those people who do want to, keep working like our good speaker, to he's not listening, to continue. But also, you know, I do have some concerns that sometimes we need to get new blood on the bench. So if we leave it too open-ended and somebody stays until they're 90 or they've been on the bench for 30 years, it doesn't create an opportunity for new people to apply. And, you know, we don't actually have that many judgeships in Wyoming because of our population. Our Supreme Court's relatively small, and and we have no state appellate court, intermediate appellate court, like other jurisdictions do. So for attorneys who want to be judges, and some people want to be judges because that's their life dream, is to be a judge, the opportunity does not come up that often. And so for that reason, I have suggested 75 as a number. Thank you.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2. Is there any discussion? Wait. Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. As my good co-legislator from Laramie County suggested, we've been down this road before. This bill's been in front of us almost every 2 years since I've been here. And it's never gone anywhere. It's gone through this House before, but it hasn't gone past the other House. And the holdup and the reason it didn't pass before is because either it was open-ended or it was more than the age 75. Had we held it down at 75, I think it has a much, much better chance of becoming law. There are reasons why you don't want judges to serve too long. And we've had instances of very good friends of mine who are judges that simply should not have been on the bench that long. And so I think this is a good starting point, so I rise in favor of the amendment.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I tend to agree with the last speaker, but I just want to make a point. Oliver Wendell Holmes served on the United States Supreme Court until he was 90 years of age.
Is there any other discussion on the amendment? Question having been called, all those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 is adopted. We are back on the bill. Question having been called, those in favor of Representative Miller's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution 5 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
House Joint Resolution 5 has passed the Committee of the Whole. I do this with great reluctance. Majority Floor Leader Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman Burkhart. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye. All opposed, no. Committee of the Whole will rise and report.
Mr. Speaker, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. House Bill 33, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill number 66, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill number 9, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 12, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Joint Resolution number 1, amended, recommended do pass. Representative Berger moved that the House rise and sit again. House Bill 63, recommended do pass. House Bill 42, amended, amended and recommended do pass. House Bill number 10, amended. Representative Stubson moved House Bill 10 be moved to the bottom of the general file in order to re-refer it to committee. House Bill 19, recommended do pass. House Bill 20, recommended do pass. House Bill 104, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill number 5, amended, recommended, recommended do pass, signed by Representative Burkhart, Chairman.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
Heard the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion passed. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 108, Committee of the Whole, indefinitely postponed. Mr. Speaker, the Senate adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate file number 71, Recreation Safety Act, ayes 14, noes 15, one excused. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 21, Interstate Succession, Adopted Children, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Baker, Escobar, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, winners signed by Representative Miller, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 29, Marijuana Possession, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobar, Halverson, Croker, Miller, Pelkey, Winters, two no votes, Representative Crone and Pinnell, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 49, Confidentiality of Participants Involved in Execution, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Escobar, Halverson, Crone, Miller, Pinnell, winners. Those who voted no, Representatives Baker, Croker, and Pelkey, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 15, Restoration of Voting Rights by Department of Corrections, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, one no vote, Representative Burkhart, one excuse, Representative Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 58, Developmental Disability Services Transition Grants, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 36, Emergency 911 Providers Immunity, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, and Danswanser, signed by Representative Danswanser, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 44, Emergency 911 Fees, Prepaid Wireless, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Edwards, Jennings, Kirkbride, Paxton, and Danzwanitzer. Those who voted no, Representatives Blackburn, Gay, and Lindholm, signed by Representative Danzwanitzer, Chairman.
Are there any re-referrals? Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request that House Joint Resolution Number 0006 be referred to Agriculture.
So ordered.
Mr. Speaker?
You re-referred that to Appropriations, right?
That, no, sir. Agriculture.
Oh, Committee 5, Agriculture.
Mr. Speaker, the bill was mistakenly labeled the suggestion was to put it to education by error.
Okay, so just to be clear, House Resolution 6 is re-referred to Agriculture Committee Number 5. Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request that House Bill Number 10 be re-referred to Appropriations.
Without objection, it's re-referred to Appropriations.
Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Swanser, Dan.
I'd like to re-refer House Bill 44 to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Without objection, so re-referred. Any other re-referrals? Committee announcements. Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, 21st of January.
We're not going to adjourn until we have committee announcements.
Okay. All right, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Swanitzer, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment today to hear the following bills: House Bill 74, Front License Plate Requirement; House Bill 100, Highway Funding; House Bill 85, Motor Vehicle Passing Bicycles; and House Bill 92, Motorcycles Passage Through Intersections.
Vice Chairman Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 2, Appropriations, will continue upon adjournment, listening to governor's letters. And then tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., we will begin markup.
Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, will meet Thursday morning at January 22nd at 8 a.m. to consider the following bills: House Bill 56, Wyoming Food Freedom Act; House Bill 70, the Omnibus Water Bill.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will be meeting Wednesday, January 21st at 8 a.m. in room H10 to hear House Bill 82, Brewery and Microbrewery Licenses, and House Bill 111, Resort Liquor Licenses. We will not be hearing House Bill 96, which was previously on the schedule.
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., Wednesday, January 21st, location H8, to hear House Bill 28, Investigative Subpoenas.
Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Education Committee number 4 will meet immediately after adjournment on Wednesday, tomorrow. Consider House Bill number 103, Merit Career Technical Scholarships, and House Bill 87, Content and Performance Standards.
Chairman Swanser, Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet Thursday, January 22nd upon noon recess to discuss the following bills, House Bill 35, House Bill 69, and House Bill 41.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Wednesday, January 21st upon adjournment in room 302. We'll be meeting in regards to Senate File 66 and other bills that are related to Medicaid expansion. No public testimony will be taken at this meeting. We invite all members of the House to attend this meeting, but it's required of the House Labor Committee.
Madam Majority Floor Leader, that clears the deck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, January 21st, 2015. And ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to go over a couple of things. So tomorrow, on third reading, it will be the same list of bills that you had on second reading. There will not be a consent list. We will go through each one of them individually. And then on your general file, you had a list that was sent out. You should have it in your on your desk. And I just have a couple of adjustments, and we will add them back in once they have been re-referred and they go through the appropriations channels. So for tomorrow, you will have on your general file House Bill 30, 21, 8, 49, 15, 29, 58, and 36 in other bills as they are read in, if time allows. One more time. Your bills on general file tomorrow are House Bill 30, 21, 8, 49, 15, 29, 58, and 36.
You've heard the motion to adjourn. All in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. We're adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock a.m.